Being 9 o'clock, we will call the meeting of the Eastern Municipal Water District Board of Directors for October 6, 2021 to order. We will start off with our Pledge of Allegiance. Could I ask our guest from the gas company this morning if he would like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Thanks for that. Please rise, hand over your heart. Let us begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Sir, can I get the board secretary to call the roll, please?
Director Crona?
Here.
Director Slauson?
Here.
Director Armstrong?
Here.
Director Record?
Here.
And we do have legal counsel in attendance. April, do we have any guests this morning?
Other than our interns that are going to be presented, as well as Adam with the Cassoon.
Okay, very good. And we have anybody wishing to do public comment?
Not that I'm aware of.
Very good. We will start off with our recognitions of our interns. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning. It's my pleasure this morning to be here to acknowledge our internship participants for this session. It's our first session back after being a whole year off during the COVID protocols, so we were happy to have them. This year, we were privileged to have three interns participate in the program. They started in June, and the program will commence at the end of October. Each one is assigned to a department, and within each department assigned projects to assist with their learning through the time that they're here. Today, we have two of our three interns. One of the interns, Luis Montijo, was unable to be here due to school schedule, which should be their focus, of course. And I'd just like to give you a little recap of the interns themselves and what they've been working on during their time here. So Luis Montijo was assigned to the finance department and is completing a Bachelor of Science degree in administration at the California State University, Dominguez Hills. Over the last months, he has been working on project closures, including clearing work in progress and deposit accounts, assisting with data gathering for an annual state controller's report, processing project transactions, and handling correspondence, assisting the project accounting group during the fiscal year end with high demands and, of course, many deadlines. So we were happy to have Luis help with the finance department. Two of our other interns are here today. I'm going to ask them to stand as I call their name, and then when we're done, if we wouldn't mind having a picture up front with President Pauly and Joe. So our first intern is Brianna Muir. And we were happy to have her in the Human Resources Department and very pleased to have her and help her assist with some of the projects we have in the department. So she is completing coursework at San Diego State University for a business degree and emphasis in human resources. And she has been assisting with our recruitment processes and evaluating and also looking at other applications that we may be using to enhance our processes, has been reviewing our policies to ensure that we're complying with all current legislation, and has been very helpful with making sure that all of those policies are updated accordingly. We're looking forward to having her final evaluation and recommendations, and we continue to be impressed with her zest for learning and willingness to share her experience and knowledge. We're thankful she chose our department and, of course, to be here with the district. So that's Brianna Muir. Thank you, Brianna. Our next intern is Omar Hamawi, and Omar is an intern in the engineering department and completing coursework at Cal State University Northridge on a Bachelor of Science degree in civil engineering. He has been completing and training a very comprehensive Blue Beam Review training, which is used, it's news to me, so I didn't know what that was, is used to prepare and revise engineering drawings. So he has been training and also using Review for retrofits to the Paris 2 desalter and the chemical area and brine receiving station. He's also prepared and revised access ramp design to ensure the chemical delivery and brine hauler dump trucks can better access the facility, and then prepared a written scope of work to request cost proposals from a general contractor. He's currently working on preparation of a cost estimate for an update to the district's facility sign standard detail to incorporate lessons learned from past projects. And soon we'll be working on a trench backfill assignment and a wall project. And according to Greg Kowalski, he's also learning about quality of work, communication, and how important to advance the district CIP program. Greg says Omar is learning the trade quickly and has integrated well into the engineering department. So I'd like to thank the board for your support for this program. We feel that we provide some learning experiences for these young individuals and also prepare us to bring in new talent to the district in the future. Hopefully they'll come back. So thank you to our interns, and thank you for your support. So if you can get to that. Could have you come up.
I have to say there's probably no better way to start out a career than an internship. I'm very happy that we at Eastern provide these opportunities. I think, as Laura said, it's a two-way street. We get to see some talent that we may want to hire in the future, and we give people great experience at our district here, and we will continue to do so far into the future. So thank you all for participating. With that, we will move on. We have a public hearing this morning. This is the time and place set for a duly noticed public hearing regarding the proposed establishment of Community Facilities District number 20-88 Reserve of the Eastern Municipal Water District, the proposed rate and method of apportionment, and authorizing CFD to incur bonded indebtedness. I declare the public hearing open and would like to ask staff for a report on the item. Good morning, sir. Good
morning, President Pauley, members of the board. On August 18, 2021, the board adopted Resolution 2021-112, declaring its intention to establish Community Facilities District number 2020-88 Reserve, and Resolution 2021-113, declaring its intention for the CFD to incur bonded indebtedness not to exceed $7 million. EMWD has received a signed petition by the landowner within the CFD, Lennar Homes of California Incorporated, to form the CFD in order to finance applicable EMWD water and sewer facilities costs in lieu of fees, Riverside County transportation improvements, Southern California Edison Underground Utilities, and Valleywide Recreation and Park District improvements. The project is planned for 154 homes and is located in the French Valley area of unincorporated Riverside County, east of Washington Street and north of Benton Road. Lennar Homes is expected to develop the property, and CFD number 2020-88, as proposed, will be established in compliance with the district's comprehensive debt policy, meeting or exceeding all requirements. Per the district's debt policy, annual special taxes within the CFD will have an average effective tax rate of 2% or less at the time of bond sale. Special taxes may be levied at their assigned rate as soon as the project is considered developed. And the board has received and reviewed a Community Facilities District report for the CFD prepared by Webb Municipal Finance, LLC, which is hereby entered into the record of this public hearing.
Very good. I'd like to ask the Secretary of the Board how the hearing was noticed.
Notice of the public hearing was published on September 28, 2021, in the Press Enterprise, a newspaper circulated within the CFD boundary in accordance with the Mello Roos Community Facilities Act of 1982.
If the Secretary of the Board has received any written protest to the proposal, I'd ask her to provide the copies, therefore, to the Board.
No written protests to the proposal have been received.
Thank you. Since members of the public have been invited to participate in the hearing by phone, I'd ask that any members of the public who would like to comment on this item, please do so now. Please state your name for the record before commenting. Do we have any public speakers on the phone?
No.
Good. Seeing none. And April, we have no public speakers here in the audience, correct?
Not to my knowledge.
Very good. Seeing that we have no speakers, I declare the public hearing now closed. At this time, we are ready to adopt the following resolutions. Resolution establishing CFD number 2088 Reserve of the Eastern Municipal Water District, authorizing the levy of special taxes and calling for an election therein, and a resolution determining the necessity to incur bond indebtedness within CFD number 20-88 Reserve and calling an election therein. I will accept a motion and a second for these resolutions.
I would move approval.
Moved by Director Slauson.
Seconded
by Director Corona. May I please get a roll call vote?
Director Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
No.
Director Record?
Aye.
The resolution passes 4-1. The resolution that we've just adopted, form CFD number 2020-88, authorizes a special tax and calls for a bond election within CFD number 2088, which is to be held at this time by the Secretary.
All ballots have been cast in connection with the election for Community Facilities District number 2020-88 Reserve of Eastern Municipal Water District, and the election has now been closed. The results of said election, which includes the number of votes cast for and against propositions A, B, and C, was unanimous in favor of all propositions.
Having heard the statement of the Secretary certifying the results of the voting on the proposition, I will entertain a motion to adopt the following resolution. A resolution certifying the results of the October 6, 2021 special tax and bond elections within CFD number 2020-88 Reserved of the Eastern Municipal Water District.
I would move adoption of the resolution.
I'll second.
It is moved by Director Slauson. It is seconded by Director Corona. May I please get a roll call vote?
Director Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
That passes 5-0. I will now ask the district's legal counsel if there is a necessity for the Secretary to read the proposed ordinance to be voted upon in connection with these proceedings with respect to authorizing the levy of special taxes within CFD number 2020-88.
I think that the reading may be waived since everyone present has a copy of the proposed ordinance and may obtain a copy from the district website.
Very good. I will accept a motion and a second to waive the reading of the proposed ordinance and adopt the ordinance.
I would make that motion.
Second.
Motion by Director Slauson, seconded by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
And that passes 5-0. The ordinance has been passed. We will now move on to the next item on our agenda, which is item 4, our executive reports. And Mr. Mawad, good morning.
Good morning, President Pauley and members of the board. My report is included in your packet. First off, I wanted to congratulate Matt Melendrez for his appointment as our assistant general manager overseeing the operations and maintenance branch. Matt, as you know, joined EMWD in 2018 as our director of water reclamation. And prior to joining Eastern, he had 13 years of broad experience with the Inland Empire Utilities Agency. He holds a Bachelor of Science degree in chemical engineering from Cal Poly Pomona. So you have yet another Cal Poly graduate. He also is a certified Grade 5 wastewater treatment plant operator, and he's currently working on earning his master's degree in public administration. So, again, congratulations, Matt. Look forward to working with you even more so and the entire board.
Thank you very much.
To kick off Matt's tenure as AGM, I've asked him to give you a report later this morning on the gas line break that occurred in Temecula last week. So he'll be providing that. Under new and ongoing items, last Friday, with this board's support, we submitted our non-functional turf legislative framework to AQUA for co-sponsorship. AQUA staff were excited to receive the proposal, and they have encouraged a process whereby they will develop the language via joint working group of the AQUA Water Management and State Legislative Committees. In an effort to start the process of engagement and to build a coalition of support for our legislative proposal, we will be sharing similar information with other agencies and entities, including the California Special Districts Association, Metropolitan Water District, as well as the California Municipal Utilities Association, in advance of their annual legislative planning meetings that they are scheduled for heading into the 2022 legislative session. In discussions with AQUA, we are looking at the upcoming AQUA State Legislative Committee annual meeting, which will occur towards the end of this month on October 29th, at which time they will vote on co-sponsorship of our proposed legislation. So as the process advances through AQUA, as we receive additional feedback, we will keep the board updated. Also, on September 22nd, EMWD Board President Phil Pauly, as well as myself and staff, had the opportunity to provide a briefing to our state and federal legislative staff regarding drought and water supply conditions. All of our federal and state legislative offices were represented during the call, and we were able to highlight not only our funding request going into the next legislative session, but also we were able to highlight our proposed non-functional turf legislation that I just mentioned. After the meeting, we were able to develop a CIP booklet that is unique to each legislative office that basically captures the investments that we are planning to make in terms of infrastructure, water, wastewater, and recycled water system. And we have forwarded those tailored CIP booklets to each one of our legislative offices. On a separate matter, as you're aware, the shutoff moratorium was originally scheduled to expire end of September. However, recent legislative action in Sacramento has extended the shutoff moratorium till the end of the calendar year. So at this time, our customer service and public affairs staff are working to communicate with our customers regarding the resumption of shutoffs beginning of 2022. Concurrently to those activities, we're still very much engaged in the water and wastewater arrearages payment program by the state. We anticipate the initial disbursement of funds to start in November of this year for the water arrearages, and the wastewater arrearages are planned for February of next year. So we will keep you aware as that advances. On another matter, as you may be aware, on September 23rd, the LAFCO Board of Commissioners held their meeting, and at that meeting, LAFCO staff and consultants presented the findings of the Murrieta-focused Municipal Services Review. At the meeting, I provided remarks on behalf of EMWD that describes our collaboration with the other stakeholders and the process that we've participated in over the last 3 years. In addition, the City of Murrieta, Western Municipal Water District, as well as Rancho, provided comments in support of the study. At the city's request, LAFCO staff was directed by the LAFCO Commission to report back within 6 months on progress made towards the implementation of solutions as identified in the study. So the LAFCO staff will be reporting back within a six-month period. Last Friday, EMWD did receive a letter from the City of Murrieta requesting a meeting to discuss ways that we can assist in advancing solutions to address the community needs. So I plan to schedule that meeting with the city manager to further discuss details and obtain clarity as far as what is the city's request. But I did want to solicit your input and feedback on that meeting, as well as solicit if you're interested, if any of the board members are interested in joining me in this initial round of meetings with the city. But my intention, with your concurrence, is to schedule a meeting and better clarify the city's request And with that, President Pauley or any of the board members, I would welcome your feedback on that issue.
My feedback is that I certainly, as our general manager, happy to meet with whoever you want. I still would like to get some action by the council formally asking us to participate before we go too far down the road. But I'm certainly happy. If you'd like to meet with city officials, please do.
That's fine with me. I mean, also at yesterday's meeting with Rancho, the Rancho folks got the same letter requesting a meeting with the Rancho folks. So if they're going to meet with them, we might as well meet with them. So
I would agree. I mean, a meeting would be appropriate. It's not uncommon for RGM to meet with the city officials, general managers, city managers, et cetera. And I think keeping it at that level right now is appropriate. You're exploring. Okay.
Yeah, I agree, too, that it's appropriate and think you should do it. I had one question on the LAFCO meeting.
Yeah.
Was there any public there, and were there any public comments at the LAFCO hearing?
Yes, Director Armstrong. There was public comments via a teleconference participation. We did not have public in attendance in the boardroom. But yes, there were comments from the public made.
Well, I concur with the other board members.
Okay. Director Record, any comments or feedback on this issue?
No, I agree with the other board members, Joe. Great.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate that. I will go ahead and move forward to schedule a meeting with the city manager, again, to better understand the nature of the request, and I will report back to the board accordingly. With that, finally, I just wanted to share with the board that this week is the Water Professionals Week, Water Professionals Association Week. This is the fifth annual week honoring the estimated 60,000 water professionals throughout California, and this was established back in 2017. I would like to take this opportunity on behalf of our board of directors to thank our employees for their commitment and dedication in serving nearly 1 million residents within our community. So I really appreciate all their efforts over the last many years, and we look forward to celebrating their work throughout this week. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the board may have.
I have a couple questions. I was curious if you got any initial feedback on your non-residential turf legislation when you had that meeting with the various assembly people or whoever you met with when you brought that up?
No, that's a great question. So when we met with our federal and state legislative offices, we did share with them our plan to submit a proposal to AQUA on non-functional turf framework, and we did get positive support. There was a representative from the city of Indio who clearly supported advancing this effort, and I think there was agreement that we need to elevate the conversation statewide regarding non-functional turf, really focus on outdoor irrigation efficiencies versus trying to continue to ratchet down indoor water consumption. We also shared with that group our intention that perhaps local agencies, government agencies, should take a leading role in this effort. We are, as you know, our proposal focuses on public space, medians and parkways as potentially a priority to remove non-functional turf. And we are not including residential non-functional turf. We're focusing on that initial opportunity. But it was well received.
I have one other question for you, too. And this is just, the last few days I've been seeing news about the oil spill off of Orange County. And I know Orange County is looking for advancing a desalination plant there. And it made me think, I just wonder if something like that happened and the desal plant was operating, would they have to shut the desal plant down because of that for some period of time? And if, I don't know if you know the answer to that or not, but, and if they did, then I also wondered if this thing was to migrate south, because that's where it's going, was to get all the way to Carlsbad, that where San Diego really relies heavily on that desal plant, if that would impact their ability to meet their demands, or if they would have to rely more heavily on Metropolitan for some period of time because of it. So just I know you might not know the answers to those.
No, it's a great observation, Director Armstrong. I suspect, I haven't looked at the specifics, but part of it would be a function of the location of the intakes for the desalination plant, be it the Carlsbad or the proposed Doheny Beach. You know, where does that lie relative to the oil slick?
Right.
I think that would have to be a major consideration on whether to shut down at the desal plant. But it's an interesting observation.
I guess those intakes are underground out there, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Director Record?
Well, just to follow up on Director Armstrong's comments, when I was reviewing the agenda last night and looking at our leak detection and, how we rank as far as the number of leaks, and that thought crossed my mind, Jesus, there are no leak detection abilities for these oil pipelines. It's the delay and, notifying the public is crazy. So just thought crossed my mind. Thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you. Thank you, Joe. Laura, do you have a report for us this morning?
Yes. I just wanted to advise the board that we're nearing our go-live on the CIS system. The team has been working very hard, a lot of overtime, to push this project along. We will have a go-no-go decision next Wednesday to potentially go live the following Monday, October 18th. So probably the next board meeting I'll have a report to let you know if it actually happened. But we want to make sure the system is secure and safe and ready to go, and we'll make that decision next week.
Very good. Thank you very much. Any board members have any questions on it? Nick, anything for us this morning?
Yes, I do have one item I want to share with you. I periodically update you on the progress that Fallbrook and Rainbow are making with regards to their LAFCO application to reorganize, and wherein they wish to detach from the San Diego County Water Authority and annex into Eastern. So just like to give you a quick update where we're at with that. This Monday, there was another ad hoc advisory committee of the San Diego LAFCO Commission, wherein their consultant that they've contracted with, a Dr. Michael Hanneman, reported out on his draft, a report wherein he's addressing three main topics: rate impacts to the potentially remaining San Diego County Water Authority member agencies, what could potentially be an exit fee that Fallbrook and Rainbow would bear as a part of their detachment from the County Water Authority, and then looking at water reliability. It was a very draft report that was presented. In fact, the whole section on water reliability, there was nothing really in there. And so that's our primary issue and where we're providing input to this whole process. But just to touch upon what the Dr. Hanneman shared with the group with regards to rate impacts, he states very clearly that there is going to be a rate impact to the remaining member agencies. I think County Water Authority has a total of 24 member agencies, so the remaining 22 would bear what he's estimating to be somewhere in the order of a $16 to $40 million per year additional costs that they would have to pick up with Fallbrook and Rainbow's departure, primarily associated with the loss of revenue that the County Water Authority will experience. With regards to exit fee, he again seems to be clearly leaning to the fact that is very justified. And he points to a net present value of roughly $19 billion of obligations that the County Water Authority has. Many of those are fixed long-term obligations associated with their QSA agreement, the quantification settlement agreement that they entered into, their Carlsbad desalination facility. They've committed to a long-term commitment under both those agreements to take a certain amount of water, and other investments that have been made, and preliminarily is indicating somewhere in the order of $19 to $40 million a year, and is suggesting that for about 10 years that Fallbrook and Rainbow would bear that cost. Obviously, Fallbrook and Rainbow have a different perspective on all this, and that's all part of the discussions that's going on. Interestingly, with regards to the exit fee, he's throwing out conceptually that there could be two ways of doing this. One would be an annual fee, an annual payment that Fallbrook and Rainbow could make for those 2 years, or, and I don't quite understand how this would work, that there might be an agreement for a water purchase arrangement wherein they would continue to purchase water to make up those differences so that County Water Authority could meet their obligations. There's obviously a lot more discussion that needs to be had here. As I said, with regards to water reliability, there was nothing in the report, but Dr. Hanneman did make some comments that I want to share, kind of indicates where he's going with this. He is essentially saying that EMWD's supply reliability to Fallbrook and Rainbow is essentially MWD reliability. And we've acknowledged that right from the get-go. Fallbrook and Rainbow received Metropolitan Water off of Metropolitan Pipeline, and that's essentially what they'll continue to do. Nothing really changes. And Metropolitan Water District has also provided input to this process wherein they say essentially nothing changes. The reliability that they have at this time will be the same reliability going forward. It appears that Dr. Hanneman's not quite seeing it that way. He points again to the QSA agreement that's in place with the San Diego County Water Authority. He points to Carlsbad Desalination Facility and believes that the water that Fallbrook and Rainbow will be receiving under a detachment annexation to East End will be different water than what they currently receive. Again, there's different opinions with regards to this, but that looks like where he's going. But he goes on to say that he's saying that he's not really believes that there is a huge difference in reliability. I think he's going to give the edge to San Diego County Water Authority, and he's been specifically asked to do a comparison. Who is more reliable for Fallbrook and Rainbow? Is it Eastern or is it San Diego County Water Authority? We have been saying from the get-go it's the wrong question. The question should be, can Eastern reliably serve Fallbrook and Rainbow? Who's more reliable? If we're 110% reliable and they're 120%, does it really matter? But he's been asked to do that comparison. But he's acknowledging that there's great uncertainty in the future, and he doesn't believe that he's going to be able to quantify a difference between the two agencies. But we'll see where he ends up. He did make a quote that I want to share with you. He says, with regards to detachment, it's not clear that the difference in supply reliability is really material in this detachment assessment, and he points more to the cost issues, which are of concern. So that's kind of the update where we are. It looks like this process is coming to a head. He reported out on his draft report. 2 weeks from now, we expect again to receive another draft, a more full draft report, which will include the discussion of water reliability. And LAFCO has a schedule wherein that they'll bring that final report and presentation back to the ad hoc committee December timeframe, and then with that schedule a commission hearing where staff will take a recommendation one way or another to the commission. So that's my update on that matter. If there's any questions.
$40 million annually seems shocking.
Yeah, it is pretty shocking.
Wow.
Yeah.
Any other comments? All right. Thank you, Nick. Mr. Melendez, the floor is yours, sir.
Good morning. Just an update on the natural gas line from last week. At about 8:30 in the morning, the collection crew was in Temecula about quarter mile from where we just did that repair on Pechanga Parkway, and they were repairing a customer's sewer lateral. They had called in a USA to have all the surrounding utilities marked, but they were performing the job and inadvertently hit a 2-inch gas line that serves the neighborhood, which started the leak. So notifications were made. The fire department responded, the sheriff and the gas company. The leak was stopped. As a precaution, about 11 homes were evacuated for about 3 hours while the gas company stopped the leak. So luckily, nobody was hurt, thankfully, and people were returned to their homes. The very following morning, the staff did a safety stand down to really talk about the incident and assess what happened. And so essentially this occurred because we did not pothole the utilities before starting. So the staff, you know, really responded well in terms of taking responsibility for what occurred and looking to the future to preventing this from happening again. So some of the efforts that are currently going on, we do have an SOP for responding to gas leaks. There was a meeting this morning to update that and make sure all the contacts in there and all the procedures are the most appropriate. And then going forward, the field services crew who do the repairs on our water system will be teaming up with the collections crew to make a full written program and SOP on doing excavations in general with all the best practices to follow that we can use for training and other purposes in the future, including potholing before we do any digging in the future. So that's the update on that.
I have a question. So potholing would have disclosed the depth? What was off?
Right, so the gas line actually was pretty far away from the marking. It was 22 inches away from where it was marked, but the tolerance for USA is to be within 24 inches. So if we had potholed, we would have realized how far away the utility was from the marking, you know, and how close it was to our actual excavation. And then we might have got some depth information from it as well.
Okay, I'm just thinking realistically, sometimes you could do all the potholing you wanted to, and you still would, there would be something there that you wouldn't know was there.
Yeah.
It just seems to happen all the time.
But yeah, those we would miss. Something. But in this case, yeah, we would have realized that the gas line was there, just not exactly where we had expected it to be.
I'd just like to say I know, and I've had conversations with Matt about his dedication to safety. So I am, I think we have the right person in the job here, and we'll make sure that our safety procedures are always in place and followed. So I appreciate that. Director Record, any comments or questions?
No, thank you.
Very good. With that, we will move to our consent calendar. Do any members of the board wish to pull an item on the consent calendar? Good. I will note, however, I do believe we have a representative from Christian Brothers with us. Is that correct, April? Or okay. If not, that's fine. I was going to give them opportunity to speak if they wanted to on their item, but if they're not, that's fine. I will take a motion and a second on the consent calendar.
I'll make the motion.
Motion by Director Armstrong.
I'll second.
Seconded by Director Corona. Will you please call the roll?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Crono?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Consent calendar passes on a vote of 5-0. Before we move to our action calendar, I'm going to go a little out of order here since we just brought up the gas company, and I know we have a representative from the gas company that's going to do an informational item for us. I would like to move that ahead, if that's okay with you, Adam. So we will take item 7A.
So, President Pauly, we do have Mr. Adam Eventoff, who is the public affairs manager with Southern California Gas Company, who is here to provide us with an informational update.
Good morning.
Good morning, Honorable President and Directors. Thank you for the privilege to speak before you today. EMWD is a terrific partner in safety, and it was a pleasure working with Roxanne out there on the site that morning. EMWD is a very, very energy-forward organization and has been incorporating fuel cells and other technologies. So some of this stuff might be old hat to you guys, but I thought I'd bring it up and take the time to present here today. So if we can get the next slide, please. So SoCalGas is going through a major change. Back in March, we announced that we are going to be carbon neutral by 2045. What does that mean? That is the equivalent of an energy moonshot for a company that's a third of the size of England. We have 22 million customers. We have 500 communities and 100,000 miles of pipeline. And so for us to acknowledge that we have to be part of the solution in all things carbon, this is a pretty ambitious goal. Next slide, please. And so we are going to be incorporating a variety of technologies. However, we do have some parameters, and they're pretty important parameters. They have to, the technologies that we use have to be reliable. We can't build a system that can get taken out by a Mylar balloon or a squirrel. We have to be able to make it practical and, of course, affordable. Some communities, if we start incorporating all these new technologies, but then make it so expensive, then we have social justice issues. So these are some of the parameters in which these goals have to be put in context. Next slide, please. So what are we going to use when I say technologies? And some of these things you guys are already very familiar with and using. We are going to be incorporating solar energy, wind. We are going to be already, and this is already happening in our own backyard, renewable natural gas. Our partners over at CRNR are already taking green waste from the region and creating renewable natural gas by creating methane in a giant tank and taking the solid waste and selling them over at Home Depot. And then also the big move is hydrogen. And how are we going to create hydrogen? A lot of that hydrogen is going to be, next slide please, coming from renewable energy. We make a lot of solar and wind energy, and not always at the best time of day. And so we're going to take that energy that may be overproduced midday, buy it on the market for a lower cost, and then converting that energy into hydrogen. And then using our system of pipes, storing it in our system of pipes, and then becoming a basically a renewable energy storage company by then using that hydrogen later on in the evening when demand is higher, and then basically shifting all that energy that was produced in the day to a usable time in the afternoon. And much of this energy is basically, when I say using energy, renewable energy, what we're doing is taking energy, and if you guys remember your high school chemistry class, an anode and a cathode, stick it in water, and you're splitting water through electrolysis. And on the one half, you have oxygen. On the other half, you have hydrogen. And we take that high oxygen, maybe bottle it, sell it to hospitals or other users, and taking hydrogen and then putting it in our pipes for a variety of uses. Next slide, please. Another way of getting to that carbon neutral, and there's really two sides of the equation. One is reducing the use of fossil fuels, and the other is sequestration to reduce the use of carbon. And that's together going to bring us all down. And this works so much better when I can use my hands rather than being on a Zoom meeting, because I can actually just kind of do this. But what we're talking about is, instead of pumping stuff out of the ground and then delivering it through our pipes to customers, we don't have to pump as much. And we actually capture naturally occurring methane from dairies, from landfills, from the grain waste, and capturing that methane so that what would normally go up into the sky would now be used in homes and other industrial uses. Next slide, please. So this all is happening already in Europe. We're way behind. In fact, this slide I have updated subsequently, and England and Germany in particular are all in on hydrogen, and they're already in the implementation phase, whereas SoCalGas is in the experimentation phase, where we have to test, does hydrogen blending with natural gas work in our pipes? Hydrogen's a smaller atom. Will the materials that we use in our pipes withstand it? Does it chemically react differently? We have to actually do all that testing, and given the size of our system, it's going to take some time. However, it's really happening. Huge investments are happening in this world. You've got companies like Toyota, Hyundai, Hyzon, Cummins, which is known for its diesel engines. They're already doing research into converting those big old diesel engines into hydrogen engines. Next slide, please. And closer to home, we have a $500 million project that's in Moreno Valley. We have actually a pump station we call a compressor station. And what we're doing is upgrading an existing turbine engine and also getting rid of some 70, 60, 50-year-old piston-driven, slow-moving, large displacement, the pistons are about that big, engines, and retrofitting them with two electric turbines, which we will be powering with renewable energy that we buy from Edison, and then two natural gas, renewable natural gas, hydrogen-driven turbines, so that we will have more horsepower, better miles per gallon, fewer emissions, and clean up both local air quality, but also improve reliability. And then while we're at it, in a next phase, we will be throwing pretty much everything in the kitchen sink at this project, in which means we will be adding hydrogen, hydrogen storage, electrolysis on site, solar, and a variety of other technologies. Next slide, please. So I'll let you see the slide for yourself. You don't need me to read it. But big project. It's basically saying that SoCalGas is not only talking about Aspire 2045, reducing carbon emissions, but actually putting our money where our mouth is. And so this project, we believe, will be underway in the next 12 to 18 months with other phases coming down the road. But it's actually happening. It's actually happening in our own backyard. Next slide, please. So the greater context for all of this is, you know, what does this mean for our area? When you have a company the size of SoCalGas saying, hey, we are going to be greening up our system, we are saying to the world, we are a giant customer. You got a new technology, you're in that lab coat with that next patent, you can go to the bank, approach the bank and say, hey, listen, I have an idea for a company, and I've got a customer in SoCalGas that's needing my widget to help it clean up its act. And so this is the opportunity paired with other things that are happening in the region, such as the California Air Resources Board opening up its facilities in Riverside, UCR having its new tech transfer park called OASIS, just down the road, actually, from UCR. All these factors happening all at once. This is a phenomenal opportunity for our region to capture and create an energy cluster in which we are developing new businesses, new technologies, new workforce development. And if you guys don't hire those guys, SoCalGas definitely would like to have a couple of engineers and HR people.
Your time is up.
Okay. But anyway, just real quick, that this is an enormous opportunity, not only for homegrown technologies, but also for importing technologies that will either help clean up the gas that's coming out of these renewable natural gas facilities, or new materials that work better with hydrogen. Great options, great opportunities. And at this point, I'll take any questions. Otherwise, I'll sit down and be quiet.
Any questions?
I have a question for you, Adam. You mentioned that you're going to have to be analyzing and testing your pipes and your system to see how it will handle it. What about like the end user and their appliances and stuff? Will there be an effect there?
Absolutely have to be taking that into account. As I mentioned, it has to be reliable, but it also has to be affordable. If all of these new technologies don't work with existing water heaters, heating and air conditioners, stoves and ovens, then we have to really analyze. And that is the end goal, is to make sure that this not only is an opportunity to clean up the system, incorporate more hydrogen, dilute that carbon atom, but make sure it's affordable and that we're not all changing our water heaters. Another idea that's also percolating, and we're actually in development, is instead of having a solar home, how about having a solar hydrogen home in which the solar that's on your rooftop doesn't just power a battery, but powers an electrolyzer. You make your own hydrogen, store it in a pipe, store it in a tank, and then run that through a fuel cell to power your house, not for 6 hours, like a battery does, but 24 hours, and power your cars and such. But these are some of the things that are happening. It's going to take 20 years to get this nailed down. It's a big company, and it's a big challenge.
President Pauly, if I may, I just want to take a minute first to extend my appreciation for Adam to coming in today to share with us this information. We have a long history of working with the gas company on a lot of innovation, a lot of technology. We look forward to continuing to work with the gas company going forward to explore these opportunities together. But I also wanted to take a minute just to acknowledge the Southern California Gas Company for working with us to advance completion of the fueling station along Trumbull. This was key to our efforts to make sure that our heavy fleet has access to gas during an emergency and other conditions. So we really appreciate the gas company's collaboration on that and look forward to continuing our efforts together.
The station is open. It's $1.75 a gallon. And thank you so much for your patience. Well, we got this thing finally opened, and we'll be looking forward to hosting an event in which you guys will hopefully be able to participate and enjoy in the very few weeks. So thank you again for your opportunity.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. President Pauly, I have a question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Director Record, yes. Go ahead.
Adam, nice to have you with us today. I see that it appears that most of what you're doing is just converting to new technologies and different sources of fuel. Is the gas company out there looking for purchasing offsets from some area where you're not changing the way you produce energy, but just looking to offset some of your emissions while you make the transition?
Absolutely. One of the things, Director Record, one of the things that we are looking at is carbon sequestration, whether it's developing new types of plants that can take carbon out of the atmosphere and sequester it into the ground, or man-made photosynthesis to do the same, or even more interesting things, such as the University of California, Davis, is doing some research into red seaweed. Red seaweed, hang with me here on this one, actually can reduce the emissions from cattle. Dairy cattle and the like. And a lot of methane actually, believe it or not, comes from the front. It doesn't come from the back. And so to reduce the burps of the cattle, they're feeding red seaweed into the feed of cattle. That reduces emissions. That might be an opportunity for an offset. Or working with tribes to help them preserve some of their lands and use their forests, for example, with the Yurok tribe, as a carbon sequestration offset. So everything's on the table. With a company and a challenge this big, we're looking at everything.
Okay. The reason I asked is that there is some new cultural practices emerging in agriculture that are, you know, basically no-till and working on soil health. And the idea is to not release carbon by working the ground, but sequester it through just the what you're talking about, having plants that do a good job of that. I'm involved with the Chico State. They have a regenerative ag initiative. And also California Department of Food and Agriculture is investing money in having farms convert to this. So I just kind of wanted to put that on your radar.
Within 20 years, we're all going to be breathing a little cleaner. The folks that are living by the freeways, that's one less kid with asthma. It's going to have a local impact. It's going to have a global impact, and I'm very fortunate to be a part of it.
I was just going to thank Adam.
Thank you.
Thank Adam for coming out. He does a great job representing the gas company and keeping the community informed in Moreno Valley specifically that I've observed. And you're really on top of your subject matter, so I appreciate you representing.
Thank you. I'm becoming a horrible bore at parties.
All right. Thank you for coming. Thank you. We'll have you back sometime. Thank you. Appreciate it. All right. We will go back to on schedule here to our action calendar. We're going to do item 6A, which is to adopt a proposed resolution of the Board of Directors of Eastern Municipal Water District authorizing remote teleconference meetings pursuant to the Brown Act, Section 54953. Mr. Mawad, you're going to present.
Thank you again, President Pauly, members of the board. As the board is aware, in March of 2020, with the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, the governor issued an executive order that suspended certain provisions of the Brown Act to authorize local legislative bodies to conduct public meetings via teleconferencing. And that is to protect the safety of the public as well as those participating in those meetings. Recently, And that executive order was scheduled or has expired as of end of September 2021. Having said that, recently the governor did sign into law AB 361 that amends the Brown Act to allow a continuation of teleconferencing via legislative bodies, utilizing the same practices that we have employed over the last year and a half. To do so, the legislative body has to declare a state of emergency and find that either one, a state or local officials have imposed or recommend measures to promote social distancing, or two, agency determines that as a result of the emergency, meetings in person would present imminent risk to the health and safety of meeting attendees. So as you're aware, currently we are still in a state declared of emergency during COVID, due to COVID-19. We anticipate that state of emergency to continue for the foreseeable future. In order to continue holding our meetings, both committee and board meetings, in October this month remotely and by teleconference, it is necessary for the EMWD board to adopt the attached resolution that determines that as a result of the ongoing emergency, meeting entirely in person would present an imminent risk to the health and safety of the attendees. So with that, our recommendation is that the board adopt the attached resolution. We will need to bring back this resolution every 30-day cycle. You will see it on the consent calendar. As long as a state of emergency declared by the state continues, we would recommend that we continue this option of teleconferencing for the board. So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions that the board may have.
Any questions by board members? I'll go ahead and make a motion to pass this then.
I'll second it.
Let Director Armstrong second
sure.
this one, okay? Very good. Can I get a roll call vote, please?
Dr. Pauly?
Aye.
Dr. Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Very good. That passes 5-0. We'll go on to B, which is to approve and authorize discharger lease agreement with the San Ando Watershed Project Authority for additional capacity in the Inland Empire brine line. Morning, Nick.
Good morning. This is a brief oral report. There's no presentation. This item, as President Pauly mentioned, is for approval and authorization of a discharger lease agreement between Eastern and SAPA for additional brine line capacity that that we require because we have insufficient capacity in brine line to accommodate our new Paris 2 desalter, which will be coming online towards the end of this year. Just a little bit of background. SAPA has purchased, SAPA has purchased 17 million gallons of treatment and disposal capacity in the Inland Empire brine line, but only 11 million gallons of that capacity is being used. The capacity that they've purchased in turn has been sold to its member agencies. But there's about 6 million gallons a day of capacity that is just not being used. And we've known since the conceptualizing our Paris 2 desalter that we would need additional brine line capacity, and we've been working closely with SAPA for quite some time to see how we could acquire some additional capacity. They would need to buy that from the Orange County Sanitation District, but the SAN District has a very strict position wherein they're not interested in selling additional capacity until they see that the 17 million gallons that has already been purchased is being more fully utilized. So working with SAPA, SAPA has implemented a couple of programs that I think were very creatively envisioned that would allow us to acquire the additional capacity we need. The first is a lease capacity pool. This is a program wherein member agencies that have excess capacity that they've purchased and aren't using, they can contribute that to this pool, and then that capacity could then be made available to other member agencies or other customers to lease that capacity. To date, only Western Municipal Water District and Inland Empire Utilities Agency has contributed capacity to that pool. But that pool program was put in place, it was not sufficient for the capacity that we were looking for. So the second program that SAPA recently put in place is a capacity utilization program. And this is a program wherein SAPA then reaches out and identifies unused capacity, which hasn't otherwise already been contributed to the lease pool, and they identify that and they put that into the to the lease pool to make that available. The concept being that that's unused capacity. Yes, it's out there. It's owned by somebody, but it will be made available to be leased. And at such time that the use of that unused capacity starts reaching the full 17 million gallons a day that they've purchased, then SOPCA could reach out to OCSD and purchase additional capacity. So through those two programs, and again recognizing that we need about a half MGD of additional brine line capacity to support not only our Paris 2 but our other two desalters, we have prepared a discharge lease agreement for that additional capacity. And our recommendation today is to approve and authorize the general manager to execute that agreement. And just want to let you know that yesterday the SAPA Project Agreement 24 Committee also took up this item, and they approved executing the agreement between SAPA and Eastern. With that, if you have any questions?
Questions for Nick?
A comment. Okay. Just I think this is a great program that was developed by the authority, and really good example of how an authority like this should work. And I want to compliment Nick. I know you worked really hard on this, and Director Slauson, who worked really hard on this, because I think it's a real win-win, and it really helps us, Eastern, with what we need to do in the interim until we know more in the future. So I just want to compliment you guys. It's really
If I could just build on that, this is a great arrangement. I neglected to say that this lease arrangement is a five-year arrangement. The cost for the additional capacity we're acquiring is about $18,000 a month. But you compare that to purchasing additional capacity, and if OCSD was interested in selling additional capacity, again, they have a policy that they'll only sell it in 1 million gallon increments, and that fluctuates year to year. I just heard when this was presented at PA24, it's close to $10 million dollars for 1 million gallons of additional capacity at our lease rate. That's over 40 years of lease. So the lease is a really good arrangement for us.
Yeah, and I know you went over this in a lot of detail at the operations engineering meeting. And I think another part of the term was the termination clause, which allows us to cancel with 30 days notice should something change. So even though it's 5 years, we could actually cancel if we needed to.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
And I think to that point, Dr. Armstrong, one of the things that we're going to be monitoring closely is the performance of the Paris 2 desalter in terms of the efficiency of the RO membranes and the amount of reject. So we have acquired, or we will be acquiring, this half an MGD, but we may not need the entire capacity. So once we have the facility up and running, we will revisit the amount that we want to lease going forward.
I would just add, Nick really worked on this. And it was something that the SAPA organization really didn't really know how to do it. And this also provides those that are leasing us the capacity, and basically an income off a stranded asset. So with that, I'll move approval if there are no other questions.
I'll second.
That is a move by Director Slauson, second by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauley?
Aye.
Director Cronin?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
That passes 5-0. Thank you, Nick. Item C is to approve and authorize award a contract for GSE Construction Company Incorporated for $1.297 million under specification number 13260S, Day Street Lift Station, Wet Wheel Piping Replacement, an additional appropriation for $1.84 million. Mr. Stone, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, President Pauley, for the introduction. Good morning, members of the board. As noted, this is a construction award for the Day Street Lift Station wet well piping replacement. The Day Street Lift Station is located in Moreno Valley near the intersection of the 215 and 60 freeways. Background. The Day Street Lift Station was constructed in 1992 and, as noted, is located in the city of Moreno Valley. Recent inspection by operations determined that the wet well is replacing the end of its useful life, the coating system is beginning to fail, and the piping is showing significant corrosion. So the scope of work is to install new bypass wet wells. Essentially, to keep the station operating, we need to keep the sewage moving. So this site is particularly challenging in terms of being able to do that. So we are going to be constructing offline manholes to divert the sewage into to allow for the pumping system, the temporary pumping system, to operate. We're going to redo the pump base and the discharge elbows, including new pumps, as well as replace all of the interior piping with 316 stainless steel. We will also be doing the wet well lining repair, and there's some limited pavement restoration needed on the site. We advertised bids in July of 2021. We received seven in August. Our lowest responsive bidder was GSE Construction Company from Livermore, California, with a bid of almost $1.3 million, slightly above the engineer's estimate of $1.1 million. Leon Rowe was our engineer of record for the design. We would like to offer them continuing services through construction of the station for shop drawing reviews, field engineering if needed, as well as commissioning and record drawing production. The schedule, should the board approve this contract, we would look to start, issue a notice to proceed immediately, and the contract time is approximately 430 calendar days, just slightly over a year. So our recommendation today is to approve a contract with GSE Construction Company in the amount of nearly $1.3 million, a contract with Lee & Rowe for approximately $125,000, the administrative award of other necessary contracts to complete the construction project, and finally an additional appropriation of $1,840,354, bringing our total estimated project costs to nearly $2.15 million. And that brings me to the end of the presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions the board might have.
Any questions? I just had a quick one, and just refresh my memory. We've done business with GSE.
Many times.
Okay, that's what I thought. I always liked that.
And they've done great work for us.
Director Record, any questions on this item?
I'll move the item.
Moved by Director Record. Seconded by Director Crona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that item passes 5-0. Item D, which I believe is Mr. Stone again.
Hold on 1 second.
Okay. Approve and authorize award of contracts for the Lower Las Brisas 1 tank for $736,000. The Contour tank for $584,000, Camellia tank for $1.2 million, Manzanita tank number one for $391,000, the Citrus One tank for $1.6 million, interior recoding and additional appropriations of $6.5 million.
Thank you, President Pauly. As indicated, this is a combined item. We are looking to award contracts for the rehabilitation of five of our potable water tanks. The district has a preventative maintenance program for the water tanks in which we do dive inspections of those every 3 years. When that condition assessment is developed, the tanks are prioritized for the annual recoding projects. Engineering supplements that inspection by actually sending in a corrosion engineer in a raft to float and truly inspect the surface, the roof system, to make sure that everything is as expected. The five tanks that came forward are listed here on the slide: Citrus 1, Contour, Calmia, Lower Las Brisas 1, and Manzanita 1. So some background. The Citrus 1 tank is located in Paris, California. It's approximately 4 million gallons in size. It serves the 1627 pressure zone and was constructed in 1964. You'll see photos on each of these of the corrosion that we are experiencing in each one. The Citrus tank in particular, different there, as you can see in the photo, the corrosion is fairly substantial. We are actually having to remove and replace the entire roof of this tank. Our second tank, Contour, is located in Paris. It's approximately 500,000 gallons in size. It serves the 1831 pressure zone, and it was constructed in 1986. The Calmia tank, located in Moreno Valley, approximately 2.75 million gallons, serves our 2080 pressure zone, and it was constructed in 1985. The Manzanita 1 tank, constructed in 1953, is also located in Moreno Valley. It's a 250,000 gallons in size, and it also serves the 280 pressure zone. And finally, the lower Las Brisas 1 tank. This one is located in Murrieta, approximately 2 million gallons in size, serves the 1351 pressure zone, and was constructed in 1986. So our scope of work, in November, we authorized an agreement with Krieger and Stewart for the final design of each of these tanks. What we intended to accomplish with those drawings and that design is the recode of the interior and exterior of the tanks, removal of the interior ladders, roof vents, safety systems, including new railing, and replace the cathodic protection system, and as noted on the Citrus One tank, the complete removal and replacement of the roof. In August of 2021, we received bids for each of the tank projects. They're summarized in the table on this slide for each one of the tanks. Lower Las Brisas, the lowest responsible bidder, was Advanced Industrial Services. For Contour, it was Unified Field Services. For Calmia, AMP United, Manzanita One, Paso Robles Tank, and finally Citrus One with J. Cole and Coatings. The corresponding low bid amounts are listed in the table as compared to our engineer's estimate. And also listed there, Krieger and Stewart was our designer of record, and we would like to continue services with them through construction of these tanks, and their fees are listed as well. We will be requesting an appropriation of approximately $6.5 million, and should the board award in October, the tanks will be done in April of 2022. So our recommendation is to approve contracts with the five tank coating contractors in the amount shown, and in addition to execute a contract with Krieger and Stewart in the amount of $114,800 for continuing services through construction, administrative award of ancillary constructions necessary to complete the projects, and an additional appropriation for each of the projects shown in the table, totaling a sum of approximately $6.5 million. And that brings me to the end of the presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions that the board might have.
I have a question, and it's probably for legal counsel. Was the Krieger and Stewart, that is totally separate from this whole thing, or was that already done previously? And then, because if it's with this, then I have to recuse myself. I understood that it was
yes. So the
done.
Krieger and Stewart was competitively selected for the design of the tanks previously, and this is just an amendment to their contract to continue services through final construction.
So it...
Separate from the bids themselves.
Their contract has already been approved.
Yes, sir.
All right. Then.
Just to clarify, Sean, are we not requesting the board to authorize an amendment to the Krieger and Stewart contract?
Yes, the previously competitively.
Then I'm going to have to recuse myself from this because of that, because I thought it was already.
They were previously selected, Director Corona, but at this point we need their continued services during construction, so we are proposing to amend their contract.
All right, well then I'm
and Director Corona, just for the record, would you please state the reason for the recusal?
Our family does business with Krieger and Stewart.
All right, thank you very much.
I will note that Director Corona has left the dais before we vote. I did have one question, more of a curiosity. Why don't these firms bid the entire package as a whole for all the tanks? Why do we individually sub these out?
For cost tracking purposes and capitalization is why we separate the tanks out as individual projects. In this particular instance, when we initially bid the construction, or are you talking about the construction companies themselves?
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like one of these firms would have probably, do they not want to bid on all the tanks at one time? Or?
There's actually a very limited market for limited availability of contractors in the coating market. Cal-OSHA makes things extremely difficult for them with safety requirements and whatnot. Most of these firms did bid multiple tanks. They did chase some of them harder than others where they thought they were going to be more competitive. Unfortunately, if one firm was to win more than one tank, they would truly struggle to actually meet the April deadlines. We have a very defined window of when we can shut the tanks down.
It's more of a curiosity question.
we have asked ourselves the same thing.
Very good. Any other questions? In that case, I'll look for a Director Record. Any questions?
No questions. I'll move this item also.
Moved by Director Record.
I'll second.
Second by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And the item passes 4-0 with Director Corona absent from the vote. That we will move on to item E, which is to approve and authorize with Blank and Veatch for $105,000 and Parsons for $594,000 for supporting services during construction. Harris 2 Desalter, an additional appropriation is an amount of $1.3 million. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, President Pauley, fellow members of the board. I'm happy to present our Paris 2 construction update today. By way of agenda, I'll walk through the scope of the project, give a little bit of background, also discuss the construction progress to date, go over our change order summary to date, as well as the request today for additional contract support services. We'll touch on project schedule as well as provide a recommendation today. By way of background of the DSAL program, the illustration on the right really shows an overall view of all facilities to date, really the well-filled as well as all the pipelines and desalters. On the upper right, you can see our Sherman Road pipeline. That project's been let. We're about to start construction here very soon. Also, in coordination with the Army Corps, we're advancing the Valley Boulevard pipelines. That project's in design. Will be complete with that sometime early next year. Further, we continue to advance the program incrementally with the Corps, and so we're advancing our well siting study that's in process right now to advance the additional series of wells for the next expansion of the desalter. And then, as everyone's aware, our proposed Marietta pipeline is in construction, and we just completed the crossing at Salt Creek. To give you a little bit of background of the project scope itself, we're advancing a 5.4 million gallon per day RO plant. The main support facilities for the plant are the chlorine contact basin, the finished water pump station. We're adding a four-bay and transfer pump station and other ancillary facilities. We're also modifying the existing brine pumping station for the added capacity of the Paris 2 desalter at our desalination complex. This illustration shows a site rendering at completion of design. You'll see that the coming construction photos are very similar in its appearance, but just the facilities from left to right are administrative and process building, our finished water pump station, and chlorine contact tank. Then following on the right along Marietta Road is our four-bay and transfer pump station, and then in the foreground our existing brine pump station and existing desalters. As of 2020, we still had a lot of work going on, and we're still doing underground work, primarily duct banks, electrical work, as well as many concurrent activities. You can see the roofs are still off the buildings. But since 2020, we've made a lot of progress. The site is nearing substantial completion. We're out of the ground, and now we're doing pre-commissioning work, and there's a lot of electrical work going on today. Here's just a photograph of our transfer pump station at the four bay. This facility will transfer water from the well field to the three desalters individually. And in 2021, here's a photograph of substantial increase in progress. Again, the booster or the pump station is near complete. By way of construction contract status, we started this contract in 2019. We anticipate completing here end of year, early next. And to date, or the base contract was approximately $50 million, and to date we have about $6 million in contract change orders, which is about 12% overall. To go through those change orders in a little more detail, I have a summary here before you. The major contributors to changes have been design errors and omissions, regulatory agency changes, and requests by the district. Again, out of $8.7 million in change orders received, we've approved $6 million, and we're at currently 12%. We have a few percent to go to complete the project. And I'd also like to highlight that we did work out an agreement with Black & Veatch, the engineer of record, for some of the excessive omissions to participate to avoid or offset the cost of the change order costs, or the premium paid, and they've participated at about $500,000 to date against design errors and omissions. As far as construction contract management, this is a large contract. We're working with Kiewit, and it's been an intense administration. We have about 600 RFIs completed to date, still a lot to go, as well as shop drawings and submittals, review of the actual materials for the project are still ongoing, and we have several to complete yet. And we have a bit of a backlog of change orders that we're reviewing and another 70 to complete the project. To continue to support the project through construction completion, we'll need to advance an amendment with Black & Veatch for continued services during construction to review those submittals and RFIs for the project. They submitted an amendment request in the amount of approximately $105,000, and this summary of their contract to date really is a reconciled summary of their total contract, and if their Amendment 6 is approved today, their total contract amount would be approximately $3 million. Similarly, we'll need to advance similar services for third-party construction management, though, with Parsons to continue the construction management services through construction completion, so we'll need to add another 8 months of services with Parsons. And similarly, their contract summary is laid out there and fully reconciled, and with approval of their proposed Amendment 4 today at approximately $600,000, their total contract amount would be approximately $3.7 million. So to summarize our request today, again, fully reconciled budgets for all consultants. We'd be adding another $1.3 million to the total program to complete construction. As far as schedule goes, we look to complete the project as soon as possible. We're in pre-construction and pre-commissioning activities right now. We look to go online here end of year, if not early next year, and look to complete the project soon thereafter. So with that, our recommendation today is to, one, advance a contract amendment with Parsons for the ongoing construction management services in the amount of approximately $600,000. Two, advance a contract amendment with Black & Veatch for continued engineering services during construction. And our request today is additional appropriation of approximately $1.3 million, taking the total project cost to date at $72.6 million. With that, I would be happy to entertain any questions.
I have no questions.
Director Reckert, any questions on this item?
Just one question. The amount or percentage of change orders, is that within accepted levels?
For a facility of this type, looking at similar or benchmarking studies for change orders across the state, I would say that they're within 10 to 15%, so we're a little bit high, but I think within an acceptable range. We would definitely like to drive the percentage of change orders to be much lower, and around 5%, but across the state, benchmarking similar projects, I would say that it's reasonable.
Do you anticipate being before this board again asking for additional money on this, or do you think this is going to wrap this up?
We believe it's going to wrap the project up.
And President Pauly, if I may add, I, in terms of construction management services, absolutely, we feel that this is the additional authorization we're seeking today will allow us to complete the construction effort. Having said that, we have shared with the board in closed session potential claim by Kiewit. And that is an ongoing matter that we are having regular discussions on with Kiewit. And that matter will come back to the board for further input in closed session.
Okay. I just want to say I have a lot of faith in Nick and yourself in managing this. So with that, you would like to move it?
I'll move it.
Moved by Director Corona.
Second.
Second by Director Armstrong. Roll call vote, please.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Reckert?
Aye.
That passes 5-0. With that, why don't we take a 10-minute break? Okay.
Sweet.
Now it is. Well,
there too, so it was.
We will reconvene our meeting. Before we go to item B, I understand from legal counsel that we needed to read something into the record from earlier today.
Thank you. President and directors, it came to my attention that the title of the ordinance for number 3A was never actually read into the record, so I will do that right now. Ordinance of the Board of Directors of Eastern Municipal Water District, acting in its capacity as the legislative body for Community Facilities District Number 202088, Reserve, of Eastern Municipal Water District, authorizing the levy of a special tax within the district.
Thank you, President.
All right. Thank you very much for keeping us on point legally with that. We will go to item B, which is the fiscal 2021 fourth quarter enterprise performance. Good morning, Mr. Ward.
Good morning, President Polly, members of the board. I have the privilege once again of presenting the district's report card. Mm-hmm. We did cover in detail at the committee, Director Polly and Director Record, so I'll be able to just skim through the highlights today. Before I do, I want to introduce our newest business systems analyst. Ms. Orlane Welch comes to us from the San Diego pharmaceutical industry as a quality control expert, and she's here today. Orlane has only been with the district a couple months, but she is responsible for the collection and the analytics of all the graphics that I get to present today. She's doing a great job, and I'm really glad to have her on my team. So thank you, Orlane, and welcome.
Absolutely. Welcome.
So once again, this is the balanced scorecard approach where we get to monitor all facets of the district, from safety, injury, illness, to financials, to water efficiencies. First efficiency measure, if this opens, sorry. How did I do that? Is a water operating cost per acre foot delivered? One thing to note here, we take the annual goal from the budget cycle, and we prorate that to a monthly historical average, mainly because we have such seasonal impacts from summer demand to winter demands. And you'll see the monthly goal reflected there in blue. You'll also note that our actual performance in the greens and the yellow bars is trending exactly to that monthly goal. In fact, it was so close in April, May, and June, we had to double-check the data. We're happy to report that water efficiency, water operating cost per acre foot delivered is trending exactly where we expected it. Just for reference, information systems assist us with publishing line graphs where we can see the seasonal diversity of our water sales and our water expenses and how they track. And finance provides stacked bar graphs of our water services expenses. And this helps Orlane and myself determine the root cause of our good performance or even our exceptions. This is where we see the millions of dollars spent per month for metropolitan purchased water, our energy costs, as well as our labor. So we have this drill-down capability for many of the 12 performance metrics. Now moving ahead to wastewater treatment operating costs, you can see that we're trending just below that annual goal, performing very well. Our third system, recycled water operating costs, again, is right on target. And our fourth efficiency measure, this is our self-generated power. And this is one of the two that we have to talk a little bit about today. This is the average of our performance to goal for solar arrays, our microturbines, and our fuel cells. And all of these self-generated power performance to target is averaged out for a total representation here. And you can see that 4 out of the 6 months, we did not meet that stated goal of 90% or greater. What's bringing this number down are the fuel cells and some of the reliability issues that we're having with those components. Some of it's related to they're getting close to end of life, the blowers are failing from time to time. Fuel cell energy is struggling to get those parts returned, replaced, and installed in a timely manner. Now, I should note that staff is recommending that we allow those agreements to term out in the next 12 months. But to that end, engineering has recently received a number of RFPs for a detailed exploration of new, efficient, beneficial use of our digester gas, basically new and more effective ways of utilizing digester gas at these plants. And I don't know, Joe, do you want to expand on that?
No, that's a great point, John. So just to add to what John described, Fuel Cell Energy, the provider of the fuel cells, indicated and has indicated for a while that they will no longer support these smaller 300 kW units. They've migrated over to much larger systems. So recognizing that they will no longer be supported and recognizing that the sunset on our agreement with Fuel Cell Energy is going to be coming to an end, as John mentioned, in the next 12 months, we recently issued requests for proposals to solicit solutions to utilize, beneficially utilize our digester gas produced at all four of our reclamation plants. As John mentioned, we received multiple proposals, and we are in the process of evaluating, and some of these include turnkey solutions. So once we have a better understanding of the opportunities, we will be coming forward to the board sharing that information. Thank you, John.
Thank you. I do want to just footnote that this is, again, performance to the contract, and whenever the performance is not met and deemed to be on the vendor side, EMWD is made whole through credits under those contracts, whether it's, again, the solar arrays, the market turbines, or the fuel cells. Our first reliability measure is our customer hours out of service is the other one that's currently on our focus or our watch list. Happy to report that we continue to average 80% of these outages are planned outages where we can show up prepared, we can notify the residents, we can schedule these outages during daytime hours. Most of these outages are related to our rehab replacement efforts. As we find valves through our valve exercise team that are beginning to leak or weep or not seal, we'll go through with a valve replacement exercise. And so we did two 24-inch diameter valves. We also replaced a leaking pipe in Sun City area along McCall Boulevard, and it required us to tie in both ends of that leaky pipe and shut down those systems. So again, all in the instance in support of our rehab replacement planning effort. These are the only two that are on the watch list. As I fly through the rest of these, I can tell you they're all green and no concerns, but we should make sure we give credit to our wastewater team for keeping our wastewater plants up and running and, more importantly, producing recycled water. We have a goal of exceeding 98% in all 6 months. In quarter three and four, wastewater team exceeded that across all four plants. Only two spills that were reportable through our entire collection system. We have 1,800 miles of wastewater collection system, four plants operating. Only two spills reported. One were related to the Pechanga Parkway sewer repair that happened. And we had a line stop that fell and went downstream. All 5,000 gallons that spilled were recovered. Our crews were on site and mobilized quickly. Customer satisfaction score, last experience survey, again, we're trending at 4.7, 4.8 on a 5-point scale. Our injury illness rate, our 12-month running average, landed at 1.1 for June of 2021. I should note that the industry average exceeds 5, and we've set our goal to stay under 3. So, again, outstanding performance district-wide. As we roll into our financial metrics, our G&A costs as a percent of total operating costs, 4 out of the 6 months are at goal or below. No concerns here. We see a little bit of adjustment in June of 2021 as we close out the fiscal year. That same adjustment is reflected here in our net operating margin. This was all end of fiscal year finance reconciliation. Worked with finance worker John Adams' group, and they're going to proceed to reconcile that more on a quarterly basis, and we won't see that end of fiscal year spike. It'll be spread over multiple periods. And our final metric is our capital improvement project actual to budget. So really pleased that during the pandemic, planning, engineering, construction, and operations was able to implement a pretty robust capital improvement program. We exceeded $102 million in capital investments district-wide. We actually implemented at not 80%, but an 89% rate. And again, incredibly proud of this. Also to note that we received, in terms of grant reimbursements, over $26 million in fiscal year 2021. So with that, we talked about only two that are on focus and are on the watch list, customer hours out of service, self-generated power. Our next quarterly report is December 2021, where we'll talk about quarter first of 21-22. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions the board may have.
I don't have a question, but just a comment. I think sometimes I would underappreciate the value of this, but a large organization like ours, it would be easy to overlook inefficiencies. They would just perpetuate and continue. But not only have you, do you guys have the ability to spot these areas, but you always dig down into the weeds and find out what corrective measures are needed. So I think this is a great program. I think it's really worth its while here.
Well, so thank you. I can tell you we get great support. Not only are we in the weeds, but oftentimes we're in somebody else's business where we have to explain to them, ask them, hey, why is the performance the way it is? And there's really no, there's ownership, and there's no real self-defense response. They're saying, yeah, you're right, this is what happened, and this is what we've already done to correct it. And so it's really just an incredible culture to be part of. But, yeah, thank you for that feedback.
Could you go back to the illness slide, the injury and illness slide for just a second? So that was, just pointing out, that was during COVID, correct?
Absolutely.
This is with the COVID numbers, okay. I'm just saying that's still very impressive. That, and again, I just stress that safety is a real cultural thing here, and that certainly reflects and shows that of all the COVID protocols we took and the seriousness of which we took it, that really is an outstanding a metric. So.
Thank you for that. So if you know, our internal goal is keeping it under 3. The industry average is 5.5. Mm-hmm. I've been here long enough to recall pre-Cal OSHA and pre-Cal VPP, we were 8.25. So just incredible growth, I think, to
Director Slauson's point. It's part of from, I think from the board to management, we've set a culture here of safety, and that to me is above everything else of making sure our safety protocols are in place. But I just want to note that during the entire COVID, I guess now going on 18 months or so, that we have taken it seriously here at the district, and these numbers reflect that. So just great shout-out to the management and staff here.
Thank you, President Pauley, and we fully agree with your observation, absolutely.
So on that slide then, I think it's really, as you pointed out, great results. But does that now in the future result in lowering that goal? That makes it even harder to achieve.
So that's a great point, Director Armstrong. So these are stretch goals, and we do reach out to the subject matter experts and owners, and we say, look, it's now we're talking quarter one. Do you want to revise your goal? So to that end, this number has moved from 4.5 to 4.0 and down to 3.0. So absolutely. It makes it even tougher to achieve, but it keeps it fresh and focused. But thank you for asking.
Well, I wanted to just echo what Director Slauson said. I think this is a sign of a mature organization that has these kind of indicators, and it's sort of, I was thinking it's that what gets measured gets managed thing, and when you zero in on the key ones to measure and you have ownership in the organization for those different KPIs, mm-hmm. It gets managed and results happen, and when they don't happen, you figure out what doesn't happen and you get back on track. So I think it's great that you guys are managing these things, and they're just really good results.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. We will go on IMC, which is an industry comparison of EMWD's water main line break history and maintenance. Mr. Brown.
Good morning.
Morning.
So I'll give a little background on this. At the August 4th board meeting, additional information was requested related to EMWD mainline breaks and maintenance costs versus other Southern California water agencies. So to start with, we'll talk about the mainline breaks. And staff obtained data from AWWA and the DDW to put this together. So the DDW, the district reports every year to the DDW, for mainline breaks, and it's based on connections. So this is our freshwater breaks, and if you look at this chart compared against other agencies, the district's at 4.7 breaks per 10,000 connections, and that puts us in a very good rate when compared to other agencies. The AWWA conducts benchmarking surveys, and the district participated in that in 2020. It was a survey of 152 agencies nationwide. EMWD specifics are we have 2,205 miles of pipe, And on this, the key number is you want a lower number. The lower the number, the better on this. But they look at it a little bit differently. They look at leaks and breaks per 100 miles of pipes, and it's hydrants, valves, and main lines. And as Director Slauson pointed out, it's a little odd that they look at hydrants because typically they don't just leak. They get knocked off and hit by automobiles. So the district's looking very good on this. And one thing I wanted to mention was back on the previous slide, LADWP, which was brought up in the last meeting, they averaged 20.6 leaks per 10,000 connections. So we're doing very well compared to them. So I want to apologize on this one. We were asked to find maintenance costs related to water main maintenance. And then also, I tried to find that and I couldn't find that. So we backed it out to overall maintenance costs for all the other districts. And nobody has like-for-like budgets. It's very difficult to find this information. So what I want to talk about is I want to talk about what maintenance we do on the water mains and then how we perform preventive maintenance on them. So some of what we do on the maintenance is we have valve turning programs, cathodic protection, air valve maintenance and repairs, line flushing, which is really just water quality, and then leak detection is needed. We reached out to the other agencies to determine their look at their valve turning crews to see what they have compared to our agency. And you can see the district's right in the middle of that. But everybody, again, does that a little bit differently. Rancho California Water District, they have two valve turning crews, but one of their crews is specifically assigned to valve replacement projects. So they're not even part of the regular crew. So everybody does that a little bit different. So the key components to maintaining a successful pipeline system is, first of all, the design, to make sure we identify the types of soils we're going to be placing the pipe in, choosing the correct piping material for the soil and application, and then adding cathodic protection where necessary. SCADA is also critical because you want to limit overpressure conditions. You want smooth startup and shutdown of the pipeline. And SCADA also provides for operational efficiency and pressure alarms in the event you do have issues. And then valve turning program is critical because it reduces the downtime. If you're able to get into a shorter segment of the pipeline, it reduces the number of customers that are affected and the amount of water you have to dewater in order to make the repairs. So when we start looking at planning for replacement of aging pipe, it's critical to identify the infrastructure that's going to be affected. And then so we look at hospitals, schools, and freeways. And we're going to base these judgments based on the age of the material. And then also if we have any hot spots or leaks in a certain area that we're facing. So the district has, as part of the R&R program, they have $48 million committed to the water side, and that's not just pipeline, but that's on the freshwater side. And an example of that program is the McCall Boulevard pipeline that was recently replaced. It's phase one of five of that program. So this map here shows some of our aging infrastructure related to our water pipelines. So on the red lines there, that was a pipeline installed in the 50s, and then the black line there is what was installed in the 60s. And you can see on the left-hand side of that, the lines going up the left-hand side, that's from our main distribution up to from the south to the north. So when we're dealing with changing our water supply, coming more from Skinner and pumping it north, we're pumping through those aging pipelines. So I worked with Water Resources, and they did a water facilities master plan back in 2015. And as part of that master plan, they looked at the existing pipeline that we have from the 50s and the 60s. And we'll focus on the 21-inch and larger there. If you look at that, we have about 70 miles of pipeline that's 21-inch and larger. And the replacement cost, based on 2015 numbers, is $194 million. So, and these are planning level costs here. So we went and looked at the leaks that we've had on the pipeline since 2005, and that's really when we started recording the leaks in Maximo. And so for the pipeline installed in the 50s, we had 9 leaks, and then installed in the 60s, we had 15 leaks. So we're still looking pretty good on that pipeline. But due to the construction era, the pipelines aren't as robust as they are nowadays. So much of that older pipeline is only rated for 100 PSI, so that does limit our capacity in those areas. So it limits operational flexibility through that. So some of our next steps, we're going to continue investigating advanced leak detection, complete cathodic protection evaluation to identify high-risk pipelines, continue advancements in leak data collection analysis, and then also pursue analysis of AMI customer data compared to system data. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Any questions, Director Record?
President Pauly, I just wanted to add, I just want to express my appreciation to the entire O&M group and Dave for pulling together this information. The questions that were raised at the August board meeting were really good questions. I think it allowed us to take a step back and look at how we rank relative to other agencies. And as Dave mentioned, that our favorable standing in comparison to other agencies is a result of a multitude of consideration. It's our preventive maintenance program. It's the investments we make in replacing aging facilities, as well as our design standards, construction inspection practices, and all the above, and frankly also the age of the facilities relative to other agencies that may have older systems. So we recognize this is a high-level assessment, but I do want to express my appreciation to the board to raising the questions and to Dave and his team for collecting the information. Well done.
No, excellent report and very valuable information. I mean, the one thing I don't ever want to become LADWP, where we have a lot of breaks and things. So it's the fact that we put the investment in. I think our customers, while they may not think about it on a daily basis, they do appreciate that we have a very reliable system, and I want to continue down that road. So thank you very much for all your effort.
President Pauly?
Yes, Director Record.
No, I agree with everything said, and in defense of L.A., they are 50 years older than we are, so probably showing their age a little bit. And I also think it's very timely that staff did this presentation and gathered this data, because we're starting to hear a lot about, you know, leaky pipes and the effect that could have on disadvantaged or underserved communities. So I think it's very appropriate that we have this information available and we're able to speak to it. So good report. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That will bring us to item 8 on our agenda this morning, which is to receive and file various reports. I will make the motion to approve item 8. Director Armstrong, are you looking to second that? Second by Director Armstrong. Can I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Passes 5-0. And that will bring us to our calendar review. Good morning, Nicole.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. I'm sure you've noticed October has become quite a busy event month, so I'm going to go over a handful of invitations the board has received recently. The board has received a save the date notice for the Southern California Water Coalition's annual meeting and dinner. It will be held on October 21st, which is a Thursday at 5:30 p.m. The district is sponsoring this event, and it will be held at the Long Beach Hilton. Director Pauly is currently scheduled to participate. Additionally, on October 21st at 5:30 p.m., the Rivers and Lands Conservancy will be holding its annual gala at the Crestmore Manor in Harupa. The district is sponsoring this event as well. If anyone is interested in participating, we do have a table. On Friday, October 22nd, the Riverside County Water Task Force virtual speaker series will be held at 7:30 a.m., and the topic will be rain. On October 22nd as well, which is a Friday, the March Air Reserve Base will be holding its Champions of Flight Gala. This is in lieu of its annual air show, and the event will be held at the March Airfield Museum at 6 p.m. This is a district sponsorship, and there is a flyer for the event on page 9.
I might like to go.
Thank you, Director Corona. And one event that's not listed on this calendar review just came in this morning. The board has been invited to attend the ribbon cutting for the SoCal Natural Gas Station. SoCalGas's natural gas station, the one on Trumbull Road. The board has been invited to participate, attend that event, speak if you'd like. And that will be November 4th, a Thursday at 9 a.m. And we will send additional information as it comes in. Moving to page 2 of your calendar review, the board's meetings and events for the next 2 weeks are listed. I'd just like to highlight a few key events. October 13th, which is a Wednesday, at 8 a.m., the Santa Rosa Water Reclamation Facility Celebration will be held in Murrieta. And I have Directors Polly, Armstrong, and Corona confirmed to attend that event on that Wednesday morning.
Correct.
And on the 13th at 6 p.m., the district has a legislative meeting with Representative Mark Tocano. It will be held in Riverside at 6 p.m. And currently, I am showing Directors Polly, Record, and Armstrong scheduled to participate if any others would like to confirm their attendance. Thank you, Director Slauson. On Thursday, October 14th, at 7 a.m., the Temecula State of the City Address will be held at Pechanga, and I have Directors Armstrong and Corona scheduled to attend that event. On Friday, October 15th, we have another legislative meeting, this one with Congressman Ken Calvert, will be held at noon in Corona, and I have Directors Polly, Record, Slauson scheduled to participate in that meeting. Thank you, Director Armstrong. On page 4 of your calendar review, we have some additional events that are coming up for October and November. On October 28th, the district will hold a Mountain Avenue West dedication at 9 a.m. in San Jacinto. And the board has received invitations and calendar invitations for that as well. You've also been notified of the annual poster contest judging on November 16th, which is a Tuesday, at 9 a.m. That event will be held at Rancho California Water District for any board members who would like to participate in the judging. Thank you, President Polly. Mm-hmm. And just a note for the upcoming board meetings, as you're aware, the special meeting for the strategic planning workshop has been moved to October 18th with a 5 p.m. start time.
Correct.
On the remaining portion of pages 4 and 5, the upcoming board and committee meetings are listed with reschedules noted. Are there any questions or additions to the calendar?
I have none.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole.
It's all right. That's all right.
Director Corona.
I think I had put my name in for the Tocano event, not the Calvert event. But.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
I'll make that update.
Okay. All right. We will go to Director's Activities Reports. We'll start Director Armstrong.
Oasis Homeowners Association requested a meeting and met with two members of the association, and you know, they're just looking to find ways to become less reliant on potable water, and if there's opportunity to use more recycled water in the Oasis for landscaping or possibly explore some turf removal. So I know that our staff is working with the Oasis to kind of coordinate a meeting and discuss in more detail any things that we could help them with. So appreciate that. The Mead Valley Town Hall was their larger annual event, coordinated by Supervisor Jeffries, who was at the event. It was a really well-attended event. We had a table there that Alma worked and had a pretty steady stream of the public going through the table and talking to her. She did a really good job, and that was really good participation, and then, of course, my update with the general manager, which was very informative. I think that's it.
All right. Very good. Director Corona?
I had my meeting with Joe, which was great. Yesterday, we had the RCWD, EMWD meeting. I brought up earlier that they got the same letter we did, and then And then also, I think they were really impressed with Joe and Director Record's non-functional turf presentation. I think they got kind of excited about that one. I think they liked it a lot. And that's all I got.
Very good. I attended the EMWD Western joint meeting. Went over a lot of things about MET. Joe always does a fine job, and along with Craig Miller, of leading those. State and federal legislative staff virtual meetings on the drought, as Joe already mentioned, that was highly successful. I mean, I think I've heard a couple personal feedbacks from staff that they really appreciated that. Again, shout out to Jolene and April and Danielle for making all that happen. And I want to continue to do those. I think it gives us a leg up in credibility when we can help some of the legislative staff get the proper message out. So look forward to the more of those. As Joe covered, I was at the LAFCO hearing, and just for reporting purposes, I'd like to note I was not there on behalf of Eastern, though. So, but as Joe reported out on that, Boy Scouts Distinguished Citizen event dinner got some recognition. A lot of community people from our service area were there, so that was a good event. Appreciate Eastern sponsoring a table for that. Had a good meeting yesterday with our deputy general manager on some of the administrative areas and some of the financial things coming up. WRCOG meeting. We got the water districts are featured speakers at it. Joe and Craig Miller did a very good job on drought messaging, and I think everybody, again, it's kind of getting our talking points out on that is very helpful. At some point today, I'm going to have an update meeting with April. So that is yet to occur. Director Record?
Thank you, President Pauley. Standing committee and board meetings at MWD. You have in your packet an MWD update from Jolene, which is very thorough, along with a hydrology report. The standing committee meetings on September 28th, there was a very good presentation from John Ensminger from Southern Nevada Water Authority about their non-functional turf removal, and I did take that opportunity to inform the board that Eastern had passed a resolution authorizing us to pursue legislation with AQUA, and it was a good response from the board. And then September 29th and 30th, board retreat in Temecula, pretty well attended. It was great to see a lot of board members and staff in person for a change, and it really magnifies how important it is to try to get together at least from time to time to try to maintain some relationships. And I would say that as far as issues for Metropolitan, I think the main one was that we have got to deal with demand management funding sooner than later, or we're just going to have to really scale back the program. And there's no disagreement that everyone feels those are very important projects, but if you can't fund it, you can't do it. And, you know, our sales are down, which you would expect because of all the work we've done in demand management. And yet, you know, fixed costs remain a very big percentage of MET's budget. So those two don't add up, and we've got to deal with that at some point. EMWD meetings, legislative proposal coordination, good meeting. And then Director Corona talked about yesterday's EMWD in Rancho, California, ad hoc committee meeting. I thought that went well, and I feel like we have a productive relationship with Rancho.
All right, very good. Director Slauson?
Yes, I attended the joint meeting with Western and discussed issues of common interest. I attended the SAPA Commission meeting on the 21st. We reviewed bid documents for landscaping and improvements to the building. Discussed the weather modification project and the water quality monitoring task force update. Attended the Riverside Community College Foundation meeting on the same day and discussed primarily the budget, approved the budget, attended the Jamil Dada Character Excellence Youth Awards on October 1st, along with Joe, and there they honor students who are really achieving well academically while at the same time living through adverse conditions, and they give scholarships out. And it was a well-attended, and Phil was there too.
I was.
And speaking with the CEO for the county, who I didn't realize who he was until later.
Phil or the guy from the county?
Yeah. Well, he was incognito. He had a mask on. I attended the SAPA Commission meeting yesterday, and we had an update of the Prop 1 Round 2 project ranking formulas. And there was some discussion on that. Had a legislative update, and we were advised of some DWR grant availability, a new grant availability. That's it, I think.
All right. Very good. We are at the director's comments or future agenda items. Is any of the directors? Director Armstrong?
Yeah, I just wanted to tag on to what the general manager said earlier. I know it's Water Professionals Week, and so I just want to thank everybody from the district for their hard work and their dedication. And I do follow a little bit of the social media, and I do see, we do have some things out there that Eastern has put out in appreciation of its employees, which I thought were really well done. And so I just wanted to just say thanks.
Thank you.
I will echo those comments. I agree. Anything, Director Record?
I would also echo Director Armstrong's comments. Okay. Thank you.
We do have a great team here at Eastern. I understand, legal counsel, we have a need for closed session.
That is correct, President Pauly. Directors, there are two items for you to consider this afternoon in closed session. One is potential litigation under Government Code 54956.9. Okay. The other one is existing litigation, Eastern Municipal Water District versus Financial Pacific.
Very good. And we're going to do closed session in here?
Yes, we will.
We will take about a five-minute break while we switch over to our closed session availability. Joining us, we are coming out of closed session, back into open session. Mr. Legal Counsel, would you report out, please?
Thank you. President Pauly, directors, the board took no reportable action in closed session after considering the two items that were listed on the agenda.
Very good. With that, we will adjourn the meeting until Wednesday, October 20th at 9 a.m. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you. So long.
So long.